Welcome to Templo Talk, a Mayans MC podcast. I'm your host, Charles Barfield, managing editor of The Playlist, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mike D'Angelo. And for those that didn't listen to last week's episode, this is a podcast where we talk about all things Mayans MC, which is currently beginning its fifth and final season. So how are you doing, Mike?
I'm doing so good. Glad to be earning my patch slowly but surely here.
Slowly but surely. Well, now here's the real test. We got to talk about the new episodes. So in this episode of the podcast, we're going to break down the first two entries into season five, because this new season kicked off with a double episode premiere, basically setting the stage for what we can expect in this final season. Also, stick around towards the end of the podcast, where I will play an interview I had with J.R. Bourne, who plays Isaac on the show. We dig deep into his character, and I ask him the tough questions like, why would a guy want to sign up to play a murdering neo-Nazi psychopath? and how do you have fun doing that? He goes into that and explains all that too.
So I mean, it looks like he's having a great time just by the opening scene of one, you know?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. It's quite the opening to a season for sure. But before we get to our discussion of Mayans Season 5, I got to tell you the Templo Talk is part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes the Playlist Podcast, Deep Focus, The Discourse, Binge-Worthy, and more. And if you want to find us, we're all over the place in your podcast apps of choice, whether Apple, SoundCloud, Spotify, Anchor, Stitcher, anywhere else you find your favorite shows. Okay, Mike, let's just jump into it. Season 5 begins with quite the scene, which is... Well, after you get past the recap of season four, you get to a scene where the sons are just beating the shit out of a guy. And it's kind of at that point, we eventually find out who it is. It's not anybody in our main cast, but it's an extension in another Mayans charter. And a guy is just getting the shit kicked out of him while we learn he's having a seizure. And his girlfriend's watching. And then to add insult to injury, we then see Isaac, who is the big bad this season, as he unzips his pants, pees all over the guys he's seizing, and sings, "We've only just begun."
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of that opening?
Great opening. I mean, how can you not love Isaac now, right? That, and I do really want to see what the OC version of the Mayans is like. Is it like a surfer group, basically? Are they just surfing half the day and then biking?
Yeah, that's it. Well, their bikes are their surfboards. Yeah. All the wars happen on the waves.
I want this show. Mayans OC, start the petition.
But we find out that this is happening in another Southern California town, and basically we find out in a meeting that this happens because one of EZ's plans is to put a Mayans charter deep into Sun's territory, which definitely backfires. And basically what this sets up is that things aren't going so hot for the Mayans right now.
So we
get past that scene where let's talk about Isaac for a second, because this is kind of a great encapsulation of just why this character is going to be fun to watch, but also scary and terrible, which is we saw a lot of him in season three on Meth Mountain. And then we only really saw him in season four when he burned Manny alive, which is quite the memorable scene. But this is kind of our like setting the stage. This is a rough one. So what do you think about Isaac right now? Are you thinking he's a great villain worthy of building a season around?
I mean, he's fun to watch. I'll give him that. Like every scene he's in, he's doing something just absolutely crazy, like singing and peeing on a guy while he's getting the crap kicked out of him. Or he's like celebrating that his men are dying later on in the episode. Or there's just a giant orgy going on and he's just he's not even smiling and having a good time. He's just perusing the orgy, just having a little good time.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. He's like peak villain.
He really is. It's definitely exciting me for how far this is going to go. So we end that scene and we go to EZ and Sophia. They have a little good time in the bed because it is now EZ's birthday. Mm-hmm. And that leads to a funny scene where Angel pulls up into the MC And Easy's there to greet him and is like, do you have anything to say to me? Do you have anything to say to me? And Angel's like, no, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? It's kind of classic, calling back to the early days where there was this antagonistic relationship between Easy and Angel, but it was all playful. It was kind of nice to see that again.
And then literally everybody else remembers his birthday.
Yeah, he opens the door to the clubhouse and everybody's like, happy birthday. And then
it would have been better if they were wearing party hats, like these giant badass bikers. That would have been fun. Like
that would have been pretty great. Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to write our own canon.
Yeah.
for Mayans OC, where they celebrate birthdays with birthday hats and surf all day.
Yeah.
So basically what this intro begins with, all these scenes, even the jokes and all that, are leading to this scene at Templo where we're kind of getting the lay of the land, because there's been a time jump after season 4 to season 5. Season 4 ends with everybody rallying and literally like going for Easy's plan to just take the war to the Suns. Mm-hmm. Now we're, I think it's like 6 months later, somewhere around there. Several months or quite a while, and we find out that Easy's plan is not working. The war is going badly, and they're losing men. They have no money because they've been cut off from the cartel, and the morale is really, really low, with people openly questioning Easy's judgment. What do you think about that? Because I know season 4 we're like, oh shit, what's Easy gonna do? And then we get hit with the truth bomb in season 5 that like, oh, not good.
Yeah, he's just a young guy who wants war, because war is, you know, it's dramatic, it feels like something that he needs to do for the club and all that. It gives him purpose. But yeah, he's just getting his men killed. The whole OC is gone before we ever knew ye.
Yeah.
He's just wanting to move forward and burn it all. The next scene, he just, you know, they take out a bunch of people under the highway and set fire to a trailer. You're just like, okay, let's just keep eye for an eye. Just raise the stakes. Here we go. Where's this going to go?
Yeah,
he doesn't really see it yet.
He doesn't. He sees it as like, we just got to keep going. We just got to keep going. And you're right. It's a great action scene, I think, where they take down a Suns convoy as they're bringing guns to the charters, and the Mayans steal the guns and murder a bunch of Suns.
Yeah, there's a great through line through this episode of them having to load and unload the guns the whole episode.
It is great. This is one of my favorite things about this show, is they find such odd senses of humor and scenes where you're just like, this is so silly. And it's played as a, you know, through it's almost like gallow humor, right? Like this idea that these guys are dying and they just murdered people, but they find it hilarious to watch the prospects and young guys having to load and unload these huge, massive crates of machine guns.
Yeah. And then they unload them proudly later for the cartel, and Easy's just like, put them back on the truck. And everyone's like, fuck, why?
Yeah. So let's unpack that a bit. So the plan is that Easy wants to get back good with the cartel. And his plan is to deliver a bunch of guns that they stole from the Suns. And these guns are like, you know, not great guns, clearly from like the 70s and 80s. But, you know, they work. And the cartel looks at this and says, no thanks, because you look at the cartel and these guys are all teched out with like the biggest, baddest weapons. And Easy realizes, oh, they're in with somebody who's supplying a bunch of weapons.
Yeah, the government.
Right. Yeah. And so Easy's latest plan to impress the cartel goes horribly awry. And basically, they say, like, you're getting left behind, Easy. Like, this is the old way.
Mm-hmm.
So things aren't looking good for Easy, and things aren't also looking good for Letty and Hope. Last we saw them, they were struggling with the death of Coco. And it ends on a hopeful note, no pun intended, in season 4, when Letty comes to the rescue of Hope and saves her from kind of going down that drug addiction path again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you think like, oh, great, these girls are going to get it figured out. Well, reality sets in, as this show often shows us. You can't just live on hopes and dreams. you have to make money and
and actually pay your rent. What?
Yeah, these are things that like a lot of shows, even I would argue that Sons and early Mayans ignored under Kurt Sutter, is that like these people have to make money somehow.
Yeah,
you can't just make money looking cool. So you have to do stuff. And Letty and Hope's plan is to rob drug dealers.
Which wonderful idea.
Is not a great plan. They're doing small jobs and they find out that, you know, they're making a few $100, $1,000, a couple thousand, stuff like that. But they find that they are $13,000 behind in rent because Coco was not paying the bills. Which is kind of a bummer to shit on Coco after he's already dead, but apparently he did
that
not.
Guy, he's dead.
He did not pay the rent. So they have to do a big job, which, as we see in these early scenes, is they're not really great at their job. I mean, they're fine at it, but these are not like master criminals. So when they ask for a big job, you're like, oh no.
Yeah.
Right. You just, you're like, oh no.
It's not going to end well. Yeah.
So that's kind of just the B plot. There's not a lot explored with Letty and Hope. Just they're in a bad way.
Yep.
But then towards the end here, we find out as Easy's on a mission to find out who's supplying the drugs and the guns to the cartel. He goes and he finds that there is the there's
broken
like
saints,
the broken saints. Right? And they're in war with or we think that the broken saints are supplying drugs.
Yeah.
And he goes, another great scene with a little bit of humor. The Mayans go all like fucking badass guys driving in the desert to go see this badass club they know nothing about. And they get completely overwhelmed within 5 seconds, guns pointed at them, completely out of their depth. And then they come to find out it is a female fronted MC.
Right. Yeah, what they're treating them like shit and kind
of talking down to them. Because again, women in this world are looked as less than. Mm-hmm. And here are the Broken Saints MC, who I think at one point the leader says like they basically get women who are kind of lost. And they give them purpose.
Right. They're there to save like animals, which is it's admirable, and obviously they sell drugs to like cover their expenses, but yeah, it's an interesting other kind of look at a club and what they do and the reasons they do it. They're like I wouldn't say a good club, but
there's,
you know,
no good here. No.
Yeah, there really is no good because they're all dealing drugs or doing something. But yeah, it's almost admirable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's about as admirable as you can get in this world.
Yeah.
And we find out
cutting bitches because Sister Anne apparently has cut a guy's face.
Yes, and that's exciting because you find out that these women are just badasses. Like they don't take shit because they're obviously, they know that they're at a disadvantage in the eyes of the men around them. So they compensate by just being kind of brutal. And we learn that they're having a war with the Iron War MC, which is the cosplay MC.
That's what they call them. Yeah.
Yeah. The cosplay
guards and cops. Yeah.
They're the guards and cops who want to play like badass one percenters and they're hateable. and Easy in his infinite wisdom, as is a trend in these first couple episodes, Easy has a plan, says that we're going to help you. And the Broken Saints leader was like, no, we're good. Thanks.
We don't need your white knight bullshit. Yeah.
And Easy again is left. Whatever. Oh God. We then have a heartfelt scene with Felipe, Angel, and Luisa. They talk. We find
family
out that
time.
Yeah, we find out that Felipe is upset that Luisa is kind of living the double life. He talks with Angel, wants Angel to be a good dad. And there's the scene from the trailer where Angel says, it sounds like you've given up on Easy. And he goes, you haven't.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh no.
Brutal. Yeah.
Yeah. And then kind of we get the ending, which is kind of sweet, which is Angel introduces Easy to Maverick finally and says, we've got family to live for. Angel's obviously trying to get Easy to be some sort of good person.
Yeah. Don't forget about the pit bull and a party hat. We did get a party hat.
We did get a party hat. you gotta love Sally. Gotta yeah. love Sally. And it it ends. Oh, and then we get the aforementioned orgy.
What a scene. Were there any other sons, or was it just Isaac?
I think
you gotta all these women.
Yeah, I think there were dudes in there. I'm not sure. I didn't honestly, I gotta admit, Mike, I didn't pause and like analyze the scene all that much.
You're not living.
but it basically shows that nothing makes Isaac happy. Because even surrounded by all this like just outrageous sex, Isaac is not happy. He's kind of just wandering kind of aimlessly. It's clear he's on the search for something.
Well, the happiest he gets is when he realizes that the sons are real, or that the Mayans are actually hitting back. He's like, yay, yeah. We have an enemy. I'm not bored.
Let's talk about that real chasing. Quick. I want to talk about that because Isaac says something that I think is fascinating in this episode, where you mentioned it earlier, where the sons come back and say, hey, the Mayans hit us. They took our guns. They killed three of our guys. And all Isaac can say is, well, what happened to the other guys? And they're like, what do you mean? And he's like, what happened to the other guys? And they're all kind of scared to admit that the other guys ran.
Yeah.
And they're expecting Isaac to be like, well, fuck those guys. Let's murder them. But instead, he feels bad for them and says like that basically the guys who died are free now, and that the guys who live now have to continue the suffering. And it's this like fascinating and really dark way to look at everything. And I think it says a lot about Isaac.
Yeah, the guy's messed up. I can't wait to see, like, if this is where he starts, where is he going to end? Like that kind of shit.
Yeah. And then the end, you can't have one of these episodes of Mayans without something really fucked up at the end.
Yeah.
And this ending has kind of a double fucked upness, because we see this just terrible, heartbreaking scene of a woman trying to get drugs out of her nether regions in a prison to give to her inmate partner. And you can just, you don't actually see it, obviously, because this is TV, but you just see this woman's face as she's struggling, and she has to go out and tell him that she can't get it. And you would be shocked to know that her partner isn't very sympathetic. he says, you better fucking get it. And so in the middle of this room of people, she's digging again for it, and she finally gets it. And you're just like, ugh.
Yeah. Should have brought some tongs or something, you know? You gotta have like a string leading you there.
Yeah, yeah. I think I think there will be I don't know, man. I was just not expecting that at all. But
yeah, that was rough.
The setup here is that we finally see Creeper, who at the end of season 4 turned himself in, admitted to all the crimes of the Mayans to save his brothers. And he's got hair.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's got hair.
I forgot he was bald. That's right.
Yeah. And we see him, and he's getting ready to like go back into, I guess, Gen Pop or whatever. And he gets stabbed. Yeah, yeah, quite a bit. That's the end of the episode.
Yeah, well, he doesn't the guy say something to the effect of, tell that rat Smokey says hello? Is that what he says? Smokey?
Yeah, something like that. But
so
it's,
he's informed there's a rat.
Yeah. But basically, we're to gather that there's a rat, but also that Creeper is in a bad way in prison. And part of that is, as we'll learn, is that in episode 2, we get a little bit more with Creeper, and we find out that the Mayans talking about Creeper, and we just learn that the Mayans, because they don't control the drugs into the prisons anymore, they've lost control of the prisons, and Creeper's basically on his own, which is scary.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about episode 2. Continue with Creeper. He gets offered protective custody by his old girlfriend, who, again, shocked to find out he doesn't want to see her anymore. and he goes basically like, fuck you, I don't want protective custody, but if you want to help me find the rat.
Yeah.
We then see Luisa, which was hinted at in episode 1. We see her actually doing her errands for the cartel, and she's basically a bag lady, grabbing money, delivering it, kind of hitting people up for taxes. It's kind of a sad state of affairs for this woman who used to be a rebel leader.
Killing people left and right.
Yeah.
Yeah, not so much.
But I think kind of the big aspect of this episode is Easy again, trying to figure out what the fuck to do. And he's like, well, if the Broken Saints are going to help me, I'm going to try to help them anyway. And I'm going to try to get into the prisons. Well, try to get the prisons back, basically.
Yeah.
And so he tries to do his macho, I'm going to stand up against the Iron War people. And the Iron War people are not impressed at all. They kind of just look at him like, fuck you.
Well, yeah.
You suck. And it's, you know, part 14 of the Trials of Easy, who's not as good as he thinks he is.
Yeah. Well, he's doing stupid shit. Like, this guy who used to be a half genius is just kind of, he's swinging wildly to try and puff his chest out, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we learn more about what was hinted at in episode one between Soledad, the new leader of the cartel, and Miguel Galindo, who is kind of her number two. And we find out that they are trying to get rival cartels together so that they could get under the or out from under the thumb of the U.S. government, because the rivals know that the reason Soledad and Galindo are doing so well is because the government's kind of funding them.
I mean, that feels more true than a lot of things in this yeah. series, where you're just like, oh, yeah, of course the U.S. government is backing half the cartels and they obviously want their independence now. So that's where Lincoln Potter is going to be pulled back in.
Yep. Yep. And we get kind of some redemption for Galindo from season four, when he finds that one of the members of the rival cartel that they meet with is the guy who killed Tomas, the kid, in season four. And you get this really great kind of cathartic scene of Galindo just murdering the hell out of this guy.
Yeah. One of the few moments where you're just like full on rooting for Miguel to kill somebody.
Yeah. And let's quickly talk about, go from this high of like almost cheering for Galindo to this low of just wanting to like crawl in a hole and die, when you see Hank going to a nursing home for his mother.
Mm-hmm.
Hank is one of the sweetest men in the Mayans, who he is also one of the most brutal, but he is a sweet guy who loves his mother and wants to set her up. She's getting older. And he wants to set her up in a nursing home. And he's like, this looks great. What's the price? And the lady gives him the price. And we see the scene where he's like, do you have a lower tier?
Yeah.
And then like she shows him that.
Three times.
And do you have a lower tier? Oh, God, it's heartbreaking. And then we see, like, eventually we see the mother there. And she's like begging him to not leave her. What did I do wrong? And it's like it's basically everybody's nightmare in this situation as a son or a daughter putting your parent in a nursing home, is this idea that you're condemning them. And it's rough to see.
It is one of the more heartbreaking moments in the series so far. And there's a lot of heartbreaking moments.
Yeah. We find Smiley Face Guy, and Smiley Face Guys, who was hinted at in episode one, the Broken Saints, to give the Iron War guys a message. They cut a smiley face into the face of one of the members of the cosplay gang. And he looks just like Joker, right? Like,
yeah, basically he's pre-Joker Joker at this point.
Yeah. And Easy decides to beat the shit out of him. Again, because he's a prick, he's part of this terrible, terrible MC, and Easy just feels completely emasculated in front of them and wants to take his anger out on the whole situation on this. And it's very clear that Easy's kind of going off the deep end.
Yeah. Times a thousand.
So we get to the scene, which I think for many will be the most memorable aspect of this episode, which is a scene with Isaac at the house of one of the Mayans.
Oh, yeah. This one was rough, man.
And it's not a member of the Mayans from our charter that we follow, Santo Padre. It's a member of another charter. And we got hinted that this charter was like fully on board in this war still. And they were kind of holding the sun's back in a certain area, a very important charter, all suffice to say. So the scene has Isaac holding hostage the Mayans guy that I was just talking about. I think he's the president of the club. And he, on one side, has his wife and his kid held at gunpoint. And on the other side, he has another Mayan, one of his people in his charter. And Isaac says, you either, who do you want us to kill? Either this Mayan brother or your wife and kid. And it's a terribly, terribly tense scene. What did you think of that?
Yeah, it's a wonderful scene. I mean, how can you describe it as wonderful? But it's played wonderfully. Just the tension that builds between him having to make that choice and taking way too fucking long to actually make the choice everybody knows he needs to make.
He really does.
To the point where if you're the wife and kid, it's like, I can't trust this guy anymore. It's like, holy cow.
So the result is that the Mayan chooses to save the life of his wife and kid. And Isaac actually follows through on his promise and murders the other Mayan in front of everybody and then just kind of leaves. And it's a message. It's not Isaac off the deep end. This is actually a tactical move, because what that does, we find out, is that the Mayan, this charter, is now not on board with Easy's plan, as you can understand. So it's yet again another issue for Easy to overcome.
Yeah.
So what would Easy do in this situation? He goes to Marcus Alvarez. And how would you describe kind of the situation for Marcus right now? Because as we last left him, he was effectively kicked out of his own club that he started.
Yeah, he's down in the dumps, man. He's kind of going through about a depression, even though he's living this like domestic blissful life that, you know, a lot of the guys would kill for. And he's having a baby. And yeah, he's just horribly, horribly depressed.
But he can't admit it.
But he can't admit it.
He can't tell Easy that Easy got him. And what he does is Easy's like, dude, I need your help. And Marcus again is like, fuck you. you kicked me out, man. You obviously don't care what I think.
Not only fuck you, but come back here again and I'll kill you.
Yeah, it's rough. And you know, would Marcus actually kill Easy? Who knows? But it's effective because it shows that Marcus is just like, he's pissed, as he should be, like, and kind of a I told you so moment, you know.
Yeah,
he did warn, this is a bad move.
Yeah.
So then we get a few scenes towards the end that kind of just set up future stuff. We see Angel, his family, his son and him and Luisa are threatened by this guy Cole, and says, if you guys get close to us and threaten the pipeline, we're going to murder you. Basically, tell Easy to back off or we're going to kill your family.
Right.
The FBI woman is Creeper's girlfriend's trying to find out who the rat is, but she gets denied. Her card doesn't work. Then it ends with an unknown FBI person is shown some receipts and is then like, well, what the hell is this? Which we then find out is hinted at that there's some issues with perhaps what's going on with the FBI. We don't know exactly, but something's up at the FBI and they're going to start investigating something. And then Angel, after getting his life threatened, calls an emergency meeting and says, okay, we got to stop, guys. Enough's enough. My family's been threatened. We're losing. People are dying. Let's just call an end to this. And Mike, what does Easy say to that?
Easy's thrilled because he knows every single player on the board now. It's like that scene with Isaac where he finally, you know, he finds out that the Mayans have some fight in them, and Easy kind of has that reaction as well when he realizes he knows where everybody sits and he's planning to start making his moves. Like this has all been build up to Easy's big master plan. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of terrifying because he shows no concern whatsoever for Angel or his nephew.
Yeah, Maverick. Yeah. And he shows no concern. And he also has proven to the viewers and his own people that, like, to the point where Easy, at the end of season 4, Easy's like, I've got this, guys. We're going to do it. And everybody's like, yeah. And you as a viewer are like, oh, shit. Mines are going to hit the suns hard. But now after two episodes of season 5, you're like, oh, easy. Let's, oh God, what, oh no. You know, it's like, what are you doing, bro?
Yeah, he doesn't even register that Angel was really, and his family were threatened. It's just like, oh, great, yeah, but this.
And it's another plan. It's another plan. And yeah, so what do you, just wrapping up here, what do you think of these first two episodes?
I mean, you can't assume that this season is going anywhere positive for the Mayans at this point.
Right.
Like, they just keep digging their hole deeper and deeper because of Easy. And obviously Isaac is so bored that he just can't wait to play along. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting. It's a setting of the table. Obviously there's a lot to come. The cartels are making their moves. The FBI is starting to sniff around, assuming Lincoln Potter and, you know,
the cartels,
he's been given a long leash to. And yeah, I mean, it's just Easy spiraling out while Angel tries to hold his family together. And eventually these two are going to have to either have it out or something's going to happen where someone dies.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are going to die. I think that's safe to say, is that we are far from seeing the final deaths of this season. And I think if I know anything about this series, I know that they're probably going to be a lot lower lows than what we've already seen before there are the high highs. So I fully expect that we are in for a world of hurt for the next several weeks as we watch Easy kind of descend and lose grip. And it's going to make for good TV. That's for sure. Cause this is a new perspective on Easy.
Yeah. Where he's not the magic memory golden boy, where he now actually has to put up or shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Mike, we're going to wrap up this discussion. But again, like I said, stick around. I've got an interview with J.R. Bourne. It's really fascinating, especially if you've enjoyed all our discussions about Isaac here. We really dig deep into Isaac as a character and kind of how J.R. Bourne prepared to play such a unlikable and weird dude. So stick around for that. And we'll be back next week where we'll talk about episode 3. And I'll have another interview for you guys as well. So stick around. Thanks. I want to start by talking about kind of your debut in Mayans, because you showed up in season 3 as part of Coco's addiction plot. Mm-hmm. You were just kind of that hippie Meth Mountain guy, kind of weird, kind of sinister, but we didn't know the full extent yet.
Kind of weird. That's very generous.
Well, relative to where you'd end up. So did you know that at that time this was kind of a long-term deal that you would be eventually coming back?
No. I did not.
What was that like when you got the call, like, hey, Isaac's now a big part of this?
That was a very, 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 very great call. I was excited to come back to do, 10 in season 4. And yeah, no, it was very exciting. I was very, very excited.
So I'm curious kind of how this was pitched to you, because like I said, you were kind of a sinister dude in season 3, but you weren't the Isaac kind of that we saw in season 4, even where you burned a man alive. But
that's when fire.
So I'm curious when you were told you were coming back, were you told like, hey, this guy is not just a bad guy, this is like the bad guy, the bad guy's fear?
Not in those words, but basically, yeah. But not in a full picture at all. Even season 3, when Aldrin reached out and said, hey, I think I figured out how to get you here, and had all these notes and point forms and references and things for me to go and look at and to check out. And that was all to the T. I mean, you know, we look back at that at the end of everything, and everything he said then, we're like, I'm thinking this and maybe this, and literally just point form that I jotted down, it all came to, it was all there. Didn't get that for season 5. And I don't know that I was expecting that, because, I knew that it was the final season, and I've watched the show, knowing that there's all these other stories that have to now come to a, you know, we got to figure that out. They've got to figure that out. So I wasn't expecting that. I sort of was just ready for this is going to be one hell of a ride. Not just as an actor and an artist and working with one of my best friends and someone I've never had somebody that I've looked up to so much as I do to Elgin. That it would be like, okay, this is going to be, we'll see as each script comes out. But knowing that, this overall thing is Isaac's gonna fuck some shit up for everybody.
And he does, and he does. So I also find it fascinating when an actor takes on a role that requires them to be like completely hateable. And Isaac's kind of the epitome of hateable, right? He's a psychopath who murders for fun. He ran a drug-based commune where he got people hooked on heroin. And then on top of that, he's got like neo-Nazi imagery tattooed on his body. So, like, what drew you to this role, I guess, is my question.
Well, Elgin. That's the first answer right there. Elgin drew me to the role just as he drew me into Little Birds. And, the first time that I met him, first time I walked into that room and laid eyes on him. But I don't. When I'm then in it, I'm not at all thinking this is a hateable guy. Isaac's not concerned about that at all. He's not at all in a place of like, are people gonna like me? Maybe I shouldn't. There is a mission, and I don't even know that he's fully clear of what that mission is. Listen, I've listened to your podcast, especially your last conversation with Elgin. And you nail it on the nose, Charles. You really do get this freaking show and get what and why, everything is happening. And it is the consequences of violence. It is looking behind the sort of curtain at these people, at the guys that we've been following for years and saying, well, what happens when they go home at night? Isaac doesn't have necessarily that. Do you know what I mean? There are versions of that for him, but talk about trauma and generational trauma. Isaac's packed full of that and not unraveling it, not on, getting into it the way we did with Easy and with Angel and with Bishop and with Hank and with everybody else and Coco. We don't do that with Isaac. But I'm not looking at it from the point of that doesn't exist. I'm still filling in all of those gaps, only bothering, Elgin and the writers when there's something that I really feel there's something I need to fill in and I can't. And the things that I do have might not make sense because I know that there is this whole other body, several that they are figuring out and working through. And so I don't see him as that. I just kind of play him like a, I just, he's a guy that is a walking, festering, open wound of trauma and generational and his own life. And then I'm just gonna play in that sandbox, whatever they write, whatever scene is there, and just kind of go, all right, let's see.
So you mentioned this. I spoke with Elgin. I've spoken with a couple times, and even with speaking with some cast members, I know that a lot of care gets put into kind of the backstory of each and every character. And a lot of times, people draw from their own lived experiences to kind of fill out those holes. So I'm not accusing you of being a psychopath. However, was there anything that you were able to like kind of put into to Isaac to help fill in those holes?
Listen, we're all a little cray cray, Charles. I mean, I chose this career a long time ago. I am not void of trauma and shit and fucking crap in life. I'm not void of any of that. Me personally, I think the one of the most enjoyable parts of my friendship with this man is hearing the stories of his life and us on the exterior and on paper couldn't be or have a chowder that looks at least so opposite, but finding those common through lines of like that thing that has caused that is a version of this thing over here. I had a violent father. I had an abusive father. I had a difficult childhood. but that also had moments of absolute freaking love. And you know what I mean? Yeah. Everybody was doing their freaking best. Hurt people, hurt people. So that's an easy sort of put into Isaac. I think I've looked at all of my roles and gone, well, you know, I've never murdered anybody. I've never set anybody on fire. I've never been an alien. I've never shot heroin. I've looked at all my characters this way. But if you boil it all down to what is the issue for this character, whether he is a supernatural character or a werewolf hunter or you know, from another planet, if it's abandonment, if it's imposter syndrome, if it is all of those, we're playing real people still, right? With the exception of the aliens, but we're playing. So I will absolutely sort of tear these things down for the characters and go, well, that I know what that must feel like.
Right.
Never taken heroin. I'm not a drug addict at all. Or alcoholism or any of those things, but I smoke cigarettes and right. I haven't quit. So I will draw on that addiction and just dig down deep and then just, you know, paint it with all the colors of what we do know of Isaac to then make it feel like a real person. I have no doubt that Isaac feels, I don't think he has ever Googled imposter syndrome. I have. but of course, especially when he puts that cut on, there must be a feeling of when he says, I'm the prodigal son's returned. I don't know that he believes that fully, that he's the prodigal son, but there is something there that's, you know, connected to the family. And why was he kicked out of it? Why did he leave? Was he kicked out? Why did he leave SOA in the first place?
Yeah.
Knew that the Reaper tattoo was there in season three. So I don't think anything had to be. I remember in season three, I asked him, do I take heroin? Am I supremacist? Is it this? And he was like, I don't. Some things he was like, no, I don't think so. No, I don't think this. And no. So that's great. I think that's enough to go on. Isaac. Yeah, Isaac. I love playing this guy, man. I have zero issues with how much people will hate him. Just great.
We'll get to that in a second. I want to ask you specifically about that, but I also want to get back to what you were saying with kind of, you know, Isaac deep down is more than just a psychopath. That's just kind of like the broad strokes that you paint him with. But there's a scene in episode two where he is holding some people hostage in their home, a high ranking Mayan, his wife, his kid, and then another Mayan. And he's giving them the choice, like kill your kid and your wife or kill this Mayan, loyalty or family. Mm-hmm. And we all know he chooses his family. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, Isaac's going to murder everybody anyway, so it doesn't really matter. This is all a game to him. But there's like this little weird honor where he's like, oh, no, I'm going to murder this guy. And because that's who you chose. And then, you know, this is the message. Is there a little bit of honor in Isaac in a weird way, or what led him to just not murder the family?
I think you're spot freaking on. When I 10 with Manny, he, you know, we read the scenes, we memorize, we have little data points of ideas, but then you go in on the day and all of that is gone and you wait and see what's happening here. Manny did some shit that I just did not at all. It was, I think that's where the honor really sort of became for Isaac, this idea of family. And I'm not sure Isaac knows what it is. You know, Meth Mountain, I don't think was just to set up to create heroin addicts. I think it was to attempt to create a family and have, is this the family that I've been looking for, that Isaac has been searching for? I will take care of these people. I will provide them what they need. They're addicts. I have zero judgment on any of them. Is this what he's looking for? Then to come back and the brother and I, Packer in the hospital. And now is it? So I think he's searching and I think he wants to push everybody, especially this club community, to who is it? What is your family? Because the club is everything for you. Blood brothers, that's it. Maybe that's how he got, you know, is grounded in the reason of why he left in the first place. He did something against them and they turned their backs on him. But I think there's a little bit of that for him throughout this, that he's searching. He is searching for answers and family and Justification. Maybe he's going to push everybody to do the same thing. When you're faced between this and this, who are you going to pick? And maybe my big brother didn't pick me, and maybe that was the thing. So I do think there was honor there. I think there was absolutely a line. I don't think there was a world where Isaac would ever shoot a child. I don't think there's a
Interesting.
world where that would ever happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, also, I'm a father, and I immediately thought, like, man, this guy took way too long to choose his kid. Like,
I mean, like, that's why he loses his shit. He says, thank you for being like, what is happening? Even to the point of like, I'm gonna like, is it not? And I
yeah.
think it's those moments that push Isaac over the
Yeah.
top. And again, I think that comes from history for him, that again, that's stuff that he has gone through. That's why, he is where he is, where we see him now. Yeah, he's a fascinating
He
character.
really is. So, you had mentioned that people are going to be upset with you, and I fully believe that that's going to be the case. Because
Everybody.
if we know anything about fandom with any show, it's that people take these characters very seriously, and you are meant to antagonize. So, is there anything that you can tease us for the rest of season five? And without spoiling anything, is there like a specific moment in your head that you're like, oh, this is really going to set people off that you're excited to see?
I think there are several moments in my head, 100%, and the anticipation of moments that are going to, these guys, our writers, Elgin, really masterful. Not just when a moment happens, but the anticipation of those moments. I think everybody will be mad at him. I think the SOA fans, I think, the minds, I think all of the, Coco's fans still despise him, absolutely and justifiably. That was a fascinating obsession, that Isaac had with Coco, his soul. So yes, I babble on and then I forget what the original question
No,
was.
I'm just, is there anything you can tease just before I let you go?
I think that they're just going to, at the end of every episode, be clawing at whatever piece of furniture they have, throwing whatever sort of item they can to get to either the thing they're scared is going to happen, to finally see it, whatever that is for that individual, whether it's that SOA wins and Isaac pulls the trigger, or vice versa. Yeah. It's a good season.
People listening can't see this, but you are literally smiling and grinning as
Charles,
you tease this horrible stuff. So that's making me
because
very
it's
happy.
all the things running through my head. I was like, nah, I don't know. Can't say, can't say, can't say, can't say. And so good. I'm glad you see it on my face.
Yeah. But all right, I'm gonna let you go. Thank you so much, JR, for talking with me. And Isaac is a fascinating character. I think people are going to love to hate. So
Yeah, that's
yeah.
awesome.
All right,
Yeah,
we'll
and
have a
thank you, man. Thanks for being such a great fan of the
Oh,
show.
of course.
You're great.